You're listening to the Student Leadership Programme podcast.
Hi, welcome to the Student Leadership Programme podcast. I'm Anna and I am a third year learning disability nursing student at the University of the West of England in Bristol. And I'm currently on this year's cohort of the Student Leadership Programme. And I'm here with Helen.
Hi, I'm Helen. I'm also a third year learning disability nursing student at the University of South Wales and also on the current cohort of the 150 Leaders programme.
And it was so nice, Helen, when we started the student leadership programme to have another learning disability nurse on the programme, because I wasn't sure if there would be, and there was three of us, so it was great.
Yeah, it was good. Because we're not like a massive group of students really across the UK, so it was great that there was three of us all together.
Yeah, it was really great. So what made you do learning disability nursing?
Kind of fell into it in a way. So I've been working in the field of learning disabilities, sort of social care, for quite a few years really, probably, I don't know, maybe 15 years or so, maybe a bit longer. Various jobs, but mainly working with children with learning disabilities, sort of been doing support work, that kind of thing. Then moved into adult services, so did supported living. And then doing that job, those changes and basically redundancy came up. So I took the chance at redundancy and went and travelled for 6 months.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
So, yeah. So as I was travelling around the world, wow. This is all right. So on my return, I then kind of went off on a different course and did taught English as a foreign language.
Where was that?
So initially I did it, so I did a sort of a training course here and come over here and did like a summer school here. So pupils from Europe came here. And then after that, I went to South Korea for a little bit to Hong Kong.
Wow.
So I kind of went away for a couple of years, did that.
Yeah.
Came back and thought, oh, what am I going to do now? So I went back into support work for children because that job's sort of always available, really. And from there, then I sort of went to coordinate that service. So I was managing a lot of the support workers that took the kids out. And one of those support workers was doing learning disability nursing. She was studying it at USW. And so I sort of asked her for more information about it. And I'd never heard of it, never heard of learning disability nursing. Worked in the field for years, never heard of it.
Yeah.
You could sort of be a social worker and go into learning disability. Because that was the other sort of option I was thinking about.
But
learning disability nursing just appealed more than the social work. Applied and got in, really.
Wow.
But yeah, you meet people who have always wanted to do nursing all their lives. It's not that for me. It was just, it's more the learning disability I enjoy or want to work in that field. It's great. I think a lot of people fall into working with people with learning disabilities.
Yeah.
You don't leave it.
Exactly. You don't look back.
Yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So how about you? How did you
Well, I kind of, so when I was doing my A-levels at college when I was 18, I knew that, well, I thought, I did health and social care and I loved it, but I had no idea that learning disability nursing existed. If I had, maybe I would have applied for it then, although I'm glad that I didn't because I was only 18 and I wasn't ready, but I didn't even know that it existed. And we were asked to make career choices and I had absolutely no idea of what to choose. So I had a hobby, which was theatre, performing, and I thought, well, that's the only thing that I really enjoy that much at the moment. I didn't feel like there were any particular subjects that stood out to me. So I decided to go to theatre college and then went on I moved to Birmingham and studied at a drama school there. And then I came back to Bristol and got a job in a theatre company that provided like drama and music therapy for lots of different people with learning disabilities, people with dementia, people with mental health conditions. It was we just kind of toured around the Southwest and had these shows with a storyline and some songs, and we handed out musical instruments, and and I was just a performer for them for a few months, and I absolutely loved the interaction that I got with the audiences, and I particularly loved working with people with learning disabilities and the engagement with them. And I loved what music and dance and drama brought to that engagement. And then I decided, after a bit of that, I decided that I wanted to travel a bit, and I didn't really know where to go or what to do. So I decided to apply for Camp America. And because I wanted to kind of work abroad. So I just applied for Camp America, and it just happened that a camp got in touch with me and asked, would I be willing to work with them in the summer? And I said yes. And they said, it's a camp for adults with learning disabilities. Is that okay? Are you happy with that? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. That would be great, right up my street. And so I went on this summer camp, absolutely loved it. And it was incredible because they made every activity accessible from we did sort of jet skiing, water skiing. They had these water skis with a seat in the middle, so wheelchair users could go water skiing. It was incredible. That's horse brilliant. Riding. It opened my eyes. We went to accessible gyms where like gym equipment could be worked around the person. So whether they're in a wheelchair or have mobility issues, they could still use the gym equipment. I mean, it was incredible.
That's so good. Yeah, that's brilliant.
While I was there was a learning disability nurse. She was in charge of sort of the medication management of the individuals that were staying there for the summer. Yeah. And I just loved her job, and I loved what she did, and she was amazing with the individuals that were there. And I just spoke to her more about her job, and that kind of sparked in my brain a little bit that this was a thing. Yeah, and yeah. Then when I came back to Bristol, I got a job as a support worker because I thought, oh, well, I know that I want to work with people with learning disabilities now. I know that. Yeah. So I got a job as a support worker. And then so then I knew that I wanted to do something with people with learning disabilities, but I didn't know what. So I went onto UCAS and I typed in learning disabilities into the search bar, and up came learning disability nursing. I read the job description and just thought, this is it. This is the job for me. The nursing part, like you, was secondary. I was thinking, part of me was thinking, am I sure that I want to do a nursing degree? But I just kept reading the job description and thinking, yes, even though it says nursing, this does still sound right for me. And so then I applied, and here I am, my final year.
Almost there. Yeah. It's interesting that we kind of similar sort of route to it, really, that we kind of just found it and I think there's that thing because you have that vision of nursing from, you know, popular culture, isn't it? That you're in a hospital and you're dealing with sick people and you know, blood spurting out everywhere or whatever. I think it's so different from that, really.
Exactly, it is. And I think there is a very traditional view of what a nurse is, very clinical, and those clinical skills are still very important, but actually the focus is more and more now on prevention and preventing people even getting into hospital in the first place. And I think that really sums up what we do, you know, in out and about in the community, and sort of preventing hospital admissions or preventing ill health to begin with. The focus in healthcare is changing to be a lot more on that now, so the image of a nurse is changing. I think
that's true. Like community work is it's growing and because the value of stopping people getting ill in the first place is kind of better option, I think.
I think obviously learning disability nurses have been working so hard over the pandemic really to prevent hospital admissions, because as we know, if people with learning disabilities are ending up in hospital, there is a struggle from healthcare staff to meet their needs or to have the time or the skills or the knowledge to meet their specific needs. So it's been a priority of community learning disability nurses, I think, to prevent that situation happening, to prevent the spread of COVID and people needing to go into hospital.
Yeah, exactly. And that people with learning disabilities have got a greater risk of dying from COVID without learning disabilities. And that's with or without underlying health conditions, which is quite shocking, really. I mean, I guess the causes for that are really complex, but it, I think it needs to be looked at, you know, why just because you have a learning disability doesn't mean you should die from COVID any more than somebody who hasn't. Then you've also got the complications of somebody with a learning disability and having to explain why they can't necessarily go out, and that understanding might not be there. So you've got those sort of complications and the mental health side of things coming in as well.
Exactly. And, if people with learning disabilities are not living in their family homes, if they're living independently or in supported living or residential services, and they suddenly cannot see their family, that's really difficult. You know, we've
FaceTime or whatever doesn't always work. You know, it doesn't make sense to people, or
it's maybe not quite the same.
People can see their family but not actually see them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think physical contact as well, because we do rely on physical contact, hugs from our family, and in a caring setting, it's not appropriate for physical contact to happen between a support worker or a professional and an individual who's receiving that care. So for months, someone's supposed to go without hugs and things like that they would receive from their family. And I think that's really, really tricky. Yeah. And I've really struggled seeing that out on placement and things, people not having the family contact that they've always had, or even just not having their structure and routine that have been so important to them.
Even little things like, you know, I say little things, but, you know, people not being able to go swimming or go for their walks where they usually go, or whatever it is, really. And then the impact on that can obviously lead to behaviours that challenge and they're frustrated. So
yeah, exactly.
An increase in that as well. Learning disability nurses have been on the front line. It's just been a different front line to what the press would report.
Exactly. Yeah, it has. You're right. And I think one of the issues with the vaccination programme was that, I think obviously we've now heard that people with learning disabilities are going to be prioritised for a vaccine. So that's amazing. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
But previous to that announcement, I think it was people who were classed as having a severe or profound learning disability were in a priority group, but people with a mild or moderate learning disability were not. And I think the statistics are not, they're not discriminating between severity of learning disabilities. People of all severities are dying, and, you know, a learning disability is a learning disability, and the health inequalities are still there. So I'm really pleased that there are having vaccines.
I'm glad that changed. And you know, I think it sort of grew legs on Twitter, really, didn't it, with Joe Wiley's sister, you know, she was sort of campaigning. Yeah, but I mean, I know, like, other, you know, MenCap and the charities were campaigning as well, and sort of, you know, encouraging people to write to their MPs and things. But yeah, I mean, it just seems to make sense to just put everybody with a learning disability in the priority group, and just get the vulnerable people vaccinated. And
exactly. You know. Yeah. I mean, I was really pleased, and Joe Wiley, obviously not pleased that her sister had to end up in hospital, but really pleased that someone in the public eye has personal experience of learning disabilities and used her voice to you know, get it out there, because a lot of people were not aware, but a lot of people, obviously we've spoken, a lot of people are not aware that learning disability nursing exists.
A lot
of people don't even know anyone with a learning disability, and they're not aware that of the health inequalities that exist. You know, a naive mind would think that, you know, it's just a learning disability, there's no reason why they should die of COVID any sooner than anyone else, and there isn't, but unfortunately there is.
I
think it was interesting when Joe Wiley was talking about her sister in hospital, I read online that she was saying that when her sister first went into hospital, obviously she wasn't allowed anyone with her, so she was completely by herself. I'm not sure if she had a support worker with her or not, but Joe Wiley was saying that she was so scared from being in hospital, and obviously she didn't know any of the staff that were there, that when she required oxygen, she refused, because she didn't want these unfamiliar faces near her and putting something quite invasive on her face. But I think eventually they allowed her mum to come in, and her mum supported her through the process. And I think it just highlighted to me, you know, this is not uncommon. You know, with someone with a learning disability, really good communication and engagement with them and building up that trust in relationship and explaining to them why this healthcare procedure is necessary is so important. And we can't expect someone with a learning disability to go into hospital and just accept oxygen without fully understanding why.
It needs to be down to the medical professionals to adapt their their communication or what they're doing, not expect the person with a learning disability to fit in with them. But yeah, it's getting the word out. But I suppose it's getting the word out about learning disability nurses in general, really.
Yeah.
We exist. And
I know, because if you think, you know, we worked in learning disability services, you worked in learning disability services for years and you didn't know that this was a career option. So if people who work in this field aren't aware of it, then people who don't definitely aren't.
And it's I think like social media definitely helps to increase the word and spread the word. I think that's, you know, I guess if you're searching nursing, you're going to come across it.
It's true.
It is a tricky one. I think, wonder how you can spread the word. I don't know, unless I think you've got to get popular press, and maybe like, you know, July, and it will just increase people's awareness. And then there's Harvey Price as well, isn't there? They did the documentary recently. I don't think there's a learning disability nurse featured, I can't remember, but it just
That's true, actually. There wasn't anyone featured, but it just highlighted the process that families go through each year. And I did really like that documentary.
I think it's just getting learning disability sort of in the mainstream, really.
I think social media is definitely the way, because so many people are using social media now, and you know, I've definitely in my own way tried to, in my bios I'll put student learning disability nurse, because I do think I am guilty sometimes of when people say, oh, what do you do? I say, oh, I'm a student nurse, and actually I reflect on that and think, no, I think I should say student learning disability nurse, because every conversation counts, and you just, the more that we're talking about it and we sort of own our title, I think, you know, it's nice to say student nurse because we are a collective and we are all nurses, and I really like that, and I don't want us to be segregated at all. But at the same time, by saying student learning disability nurse, or I write it in my bio, I hope that if people stumble across my page or I'm having a conversation with them in the street, at least they've heard it, and they might think, and then the next time they hear it, and then the next time, and so on until they're more familiar with the concept, I guess.
I guess it's, I think everything starts, you know, small, really, isn't it?
For most of my degree, my grandparents have thought that I am like a student adult nurse, I think, because they said to me in the past things about working on the wards and in your uniform and things. And I have said to them, you know, I may well work on a ward and I may well work in a uniform, but I also, it's equally as likely that I may not work in either of those places or in a uniform. And for the older generation, like my grandparents, they've struggled to understand the concept of what I'm doing. I do think maybe a lot of people around me, I am trying to get better at specifying what I'm doing and the sort of placements I'm on, so it gives people a bit of context. Because I think it's one thing saying you're a learning disability nurse, but then I guess it's about providing that context around what actually does that look like and what do you do?
It's interesting because obviously learning disability nursing has been around for a long time.
Years,
but you know, obviously people with learning disabilities were locked away in institutions and weren't sort of part of the community, although that's obviously changed for quite a few years as well. I think it's sort of maybe a hangover from that people just didn't know, because they weren't part of the community, they had their own communities. That's a social role, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously part of our role as learning disability nurses, is to ensure that the people that we're working with have an active role in their community. Because I think, you know, a lot of people that you talk to probably have never had a conversation with someone with a learning disability, and that
I just
find that bewildering, because they're a massive portion of our population, and you know, obviously like you said, for years people with learning disabilities were in hospitals or long stay institutions where they weren't part of the community, but now that they are, it's time that, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely time, I think. It's been a, you know, what was it, 1980s, I think they started to shut them down, didn't they?
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you kind of, when you're working in the world of sort of, you know, you're doing jobs within learning disability, you sort of forget that actually most people haven't met somebody with a learning disability, haven't had that conversation with somebody with a learning disability, and I don't know if there's still that bit of fear from people because it's the unknown, you know.
Yeah.
I know when I started at my first job as a support worker with children with learning disabilities, and I just thought, how am I going to talk to this child? Yeah. How am I going to communicate with them? You know.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of fear of the unknown, really.
Yeah.
Actually, it's fine. you find a way.
Yeah.
You get to know the person, you get to know the child, and how they communicate, and it's fun.
You know, you probably speak for a lot of people when you said that about feeling a bit wary to begin with and thinking, and I think people can feel a little bit silly sometimes when they're trying to communicate in a way that's not conventional, but actually, you know, there's nothing silly about it at all. And the other thing that I think is a barrier sometimes is processing time. You know, a lot of people with learning disabilities have a longer processing time than someone without a learning disability, and people can find silence awkward. So they sort of ask a question and then wait for a reply, but it doesn't come as quickly as they want it to. So then they just continue talking or they stop the conversation. And I think, it's definitely about sort of normalizing that silence is okay. We don't have to rush through life. We don't have to rush through conversations. We can just take our time and allow people that time that they need.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think people don't like silence.
No.
Generally speaking, and people always want to fill a silence. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Which obviously, as we know, is just overwhelming for some people. So I actually have a friend with a learning disability. I've known him for most of my life, actually. I really value him in my life. And he's an incredible man. He's taught me so much. And he's, you know, as valuable a friend than any of my others. And I can't help but thinking sometimes, you know, people are missing out so much because there's so much to gain from sort of interacting with all different kinds of people.
The world is made up of many people. And and people with learning disabilities are one part of that.
Exactly. And I think also about, I suppose, something that I saw out on placement last year was that one of the nurses in the team was sort of offering consultation, advice, guidance for mainstream healthcare professionals. So this was in a CAMHS service, a child and adolescent mental health service. The nurse that I'm speaking of sat in the learning disability team, but for the mainstream CAMHS professionals, the mainstream mental health professionals, he would offer sort of a telephone guidance or face-to-face guidance on if they were supporting anyone on their caseload who may have a learning disability or a suspected learning disability or any other neurodevelopmental conditions, ADHD, autism. And he sort of provided, some support to them. So I think, because I think sometimes we don't want to fall into the trap of saying, well, we'll just support everyone with a learning disability and then stop in that mainstream access to healthcare. And I think he found the right balance of upskilling mainstream professionals so that they had the skills and confidence and knowledge to support these individuals. So they didn't need to come, they potentially didn't need to come to the learning disability specific team. They could be supported at where they were. And I hope that that is the future, I guess, in a way that we can upskill each other in healthcare and work together to ensure that everyone feels confident and has the skills and knowledge to achieve that.
Or know where to go and find it. Because exactly. I mean, people with learning disabilities have the same illnesses and conditions as anybody else.
Yeah.
And will access mainstream services. So those mainstream services do need to sort of know what to do in a way, I guess. I think there'll always be the need for sort of specialists, nurses or doctors in learning disability, or allied health, all sort of professions. But yeah, I think definitely, I think that would be sort of, you know, the dream really, isn't it? That people would end up, this is just access mainstream clinics and get treated and get those reasonable adjustments that are needed. And but that sounds like a great scheme, really. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good way of upskilling everyone and ensuring that everyone's needs were being met. So it's only a couple of months before we qualify as official learning disability nurses. So how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to sort of qualifying now.
And, yeah.
Yeah, finishing the course really and just, starting to work. And I think it was, you know, definitely the right decision to come into learning disability nursing. Obviously for me, I'm a slightly older student than although I think learning disability nursing does tend to attract mature students.
It does, So
although it's kind of a changing career, it's almost a sidestep rather than a completely different career for me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, overall right decision for me to have made, and looking forward to, I think there's so many options as well where to go within learning disability nursing. So looking forward to kind of starting and just seeing where I end up, I guess.
Where it takes you.
It seems to be
ever more limitless at the moment with learning disability nursing, and it feels like there are so many more career opportunities popping up here, there and everywhere, and so many exciting things happening within the NHS as well. It's an exciting time to qualify, I think.
And I think, you know, training through a pandemic as well, I mean, that's something we can't predict, and hopefully it will be the only pandemic we have to work through. Do you kind of know where you want to work? Are job applications a bit different, I think, to England?
Oh, is it? So do you apply for a specific job, or is it different?
So for NHS, private jobs are different, but for NHS jobs, they do a thing called streamlining. So you, all the sort of available jobs go onto, I guess, like a website.
Yeah.
And you put in one application and sort of give your top three or top four jobs that you, you'd like to do. And then the employers look at the applications and you kind of get matched up.
That makes sense.
I think whereas in England you apply for jobs individually.
We apply for jobs individually, but luckily on the NHS jobs website I've recently found, once you submit an application you can sort of save your details, so you don't keep having to enter your all qualifications and your contact details, because I think that would take a long time. Because I certainly I'm kind of thinking of applying to multiple jobs because you just never know. There are so many things that I'd like to do. I've loved all my placements, so I couldn't really pick one job. So I'm hoping that the right job will pick me in a way. But I'll be starting that soon.
So for the streamlining opens in Wales, all nursing students, it opens at the end of April. I think. To kind of do your application and stuff. And then so by the end of June, so that's end of May, it kind of closes, then there's another month then for the health boards to decide. So at the end of June you should kind of know where you're going.
Exciting. Well, good luck with everything. Thanks, Helen. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Student Leadership Programme podcast. For more information, visit councilofdeans.org.uk/studentleadership.